The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. On this week's show, we're going to talk a bit about what happens to an annuity when the annuity owner passes away. This is a topic that I don't think is talked about a whole lot. And actually, I haven't even thought about this topic for a long period of time. So I'll admit right now that Jim's going to be doing most of the talking today, which I guess isn't atypical. But
hey, I heard that.
I've gone at points in the past through all of these rules. And honestly, I haven't had to look at them for so long. I'm going to be a little rusty on this. So I hope you're ready to do all the work today.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
All right. What I wanted to talk about, folks, and I got the idea working with Chris this week on a couple of client cases, one in particular. We won't get into the case, Chris. But he had asked me a question about an annuity, and as I was answering it, I told him something. And I don't know if what I told him helped him or not. We haven't had a chance to talk. But I thought this would make a good EDU podcast. So what I want to do with our annuity discussion, folks, there's really two parts to any annuity discussion. And for you do-it-yourselfers, two things that you have to take into an account. And Chris, I think because annuities or annuity providers, let me word it better that way, are more product and sales driven, they talk about annuities as a product. I want to start talking about annuities as an item, as a tax item. Just like we do with IRAs, Chris, and we get into all the distribution rules and how they all work and how IRAs operate and all the little nuances of IRAs, annuities have the same thing, folks. They are a tax item. Annuities receive special tax treatment. But that special tax treatment makes them far more complex than passing away with a regular brokerage account. I think you would say, Chris, now granted, a probate attorney may dispute this, depending on what state a listener dies in. But as far as we're concerned, Chris, from an administrative standpoint, when someone dies with a regular brokerage account, especially if there's a joint owner attached to it, it's pretty easy, is it not, from an administration standpoint, passing that brokerage account on?
It is. It's really just a removal of the person who's now passed, and that things just kind of go on when it's a jointly
Especially,
held account.
Right. Mm-hmm. If it's a jointly held one, the joint owner becomes the owner. Yep. if there is no joint owner, it goes to the estate generally. And here's where it can get a little bit deep into the probate rules, which we're not going to get into. I'm just trying to give an example, folks, that when you pass away with a regular brokerage style account, it's pretty easy. You pass away with an IRA and you pass away with an annuity, it's a lot more complex. And the reason is the same, Chris, comes to those wonderful three initials. I know you have no idea where I'm going with this, but I think you can guess the three initials. Do you have any idea what I'm getting at?
For an annuity?
For an annuity or an IRA? What three initials at death screw everything up?
I'll say it like you. I-R-D.
That's pretty good. Like so that. You know Bostonian.
I'm speaking my fluent Bostonian.
That was pretty good. You sound almost Kennedy-esque.
Wow. That's high praise.
That's pretty good. Yes. Chris is correct, folks. IRD, income with respect to a decedent. Kind of messes everything up. So what I want to do today is just start with one aspect. But over the coming months, weeks, months, years, perhaps, I want to share more and more and more with our listeners about the operational aspects of an annuity, not the product-driven aspects. We've covered them ad nauseum over the past few shows. Let's get in more of the operational aspects. And today, thanks to a conversation with Chris via email we had, I thought, well, let's begin with death. And what happens when someone who owns an annuity dies? Now, it's pretty easy, Chris. Easy in a relative sense. Let's put it that way, listeners. If someone owns an annuity and dies, and that annuity is held inside an IRA, do you know why it's technically easier, Chris?
Well, it's technically easier because the IRA wrapper is going to essentially control the beneficiary treatment of that.
Exactly. When an annuity is held inside an IRA, and it can be, in other words, and a lot of people think, Chris, oh, I can buy an annuity inside my IRA. I'm going to put an annuity inside my existing IRA. And some custodians may allow you to hold an annuity inside an IRA, but very few do. Most of the time when we reference you're going to hold it in an IRA, the insurance company, when you open the annuity, will open it inside an IRA for you. So it will receive all the rules and regulations and benefits, if you will, of an IRA. So if you have an annuity inside an IRA, this podcast isn't really going to apply to you. Because as Chris said, the rules that apply are the rules of IRAs. So when we talk on future shows about IRA distribution rules at death, it does not matter what the IRA owns, the distribution rules are all the same. The IRA could own standard ETFs, mutual funds, bonds. It could own real estate. It could own an annuity. The rules are all going to be the same. Today, I want to talk about what are called in the industry non-qualified annuities. Put in plain English, an annuity that's not held inside an IRA. It doesn't qualify for special tax treatments of the IRA, gets special tax treatments of the annuity, but not special tax treatment of an IRA. So the industry calls them non-qualified. So far, so good, Chris?
Perfect so far.
Excellent. No, easy, right?
No verbal stumbles or anything.
I don't mean my talking abilities. I mean,
it's been spot on so far.
Okay. Because Chris, literally, folks, is not well-schooled in this. Social Security, he'll eat my lunch. On this, I think I'm a little bit faster than him on this. Hopefully, I'm a little
well,
faster.
Well, you swim in that pool a lot more.
I do swim
than
in this pool.
I do.
As Chris
so
puts.
I'm pretty rare. I stuck my toe in it a while back because I had to, but that's not the pool I visit on a regular basis.
No, that's why our firm has professionals of all different areas of expertise because we all have them in the office. Okay, so we're talking about non-IRAs. Non-qualified annuities is what the industry calls them. And we're going to talk, Chris, about annuities that are not in the payout phase. In other words, deferred annuities. Very same annuities we've been talking about in the last few shows when we talked about indexed annuities. Remember that, Chris?
I do.
Those were a type of fixed deferred annuity. So do keep in mind, folks, all annuities, every single annuity out there, and there's tons of different types of annuities from dozens of different insurance providers. All annuities will have an income benefit. They have to, or they wouldn't be an annuity. And the income benefit is when you, quote unquote, annuitize, which is a verb, it's an action. You give up the pool of money in the annuity and you accept in return a lifetime stream of income. We're going to talk today about non-qualified deferred annuities not in a payout phase. Annuities in a payout phase will have different rules when the owners die. We'll cover those on another show. Today, we're going to talk about non-qualified annuities not in IRAs, deferred annuities you haven't turned the income on. Make sense so far, Chris?
Yep, so far. I'm even following.
Perfect. Very good. So all annuities will have a beneficiary. The beneficiary is the person or persons who will receive the death benefit. Now, we'll talk on other shows. There's different types of death benefits. There can be enhanced death benefits. There can be a death benefit. There's the minimum guaranteed death benefit. There can be all different types of death benefits built into an annuity. Totally new show we can do on those. But in short, real basic, when the owner dies, the beneficiary generally inherits the annuity. Now, all annuities also have another person, folks, called the annuitant. The annuitant is whose life expectancy the income payments will be based on if you were to take that deferred annuity and turn it into an income stream. As I said on previous shows, annuities do not have required minimum distributions. You don't have to begin taking money out of them at 72 unless they're inside an IRA. And as Chris said, that's when IRA rules take place. But we're not talking about those today. So a non-qualified annuity, you don't have to take money out. Now, there'll be an annuitization date that's usually between 85 and 90-something that the insurance company will place on them, and they will have to begin paying out by that date, or you have to close the annuity, one or the other. The insurance company gives you the choice. But until you hit the annuitization date, you're not going to be forced to have to take money out of your annuity. So we're talking about annuities that are deferred. They haven't reached the annuitization date, and you haven't began taking money out of them. But if you were to take money out of them, they being the insurance company, will look at the annuitant you named on your policy and base the income on that person's age. Why is this important? Some older annuities, prior to, I think it was, Chris, January 14th of 1985. I don't know why that sticks in my head. What? It's 1985, but I think it was January 14th. Or it might have been July 14th. One of the J months of 1985. The rules changed pretty much in the annuity world, driven by, I forget what rule the government passed, what act they passed. And pretty much annuities called annuitant-driven annuities were gone, and all annuities became owner-driven annuities. Do you know what they mean by that, owner-driven or annuitant-driven?
Well, you can technically have a different owner than the annuitant, and
correct,
they now that essentially gets blended into one, correct? It's owner
it
focused.
It does since I believe January of 85, but it might have been July of 85. Might have been 84. No, it's 85. I'm 99% sure it's 85. Prior to that, you could have an annuitant driven or owner driven. After that, they are all owner driven. What do we mean by that, folks? Whose death triggers the death benefit? Pretty much nowadays, Chris hit the nail on the head. Most annuities, the owner and the annuitant are the same. And Chris, that is the easiest way to have annuities. It's when you have annuities where the owner and the annuitant are different, you can sometimes run into trouble. But all annuities since 85 have to be owner-driven. In other words, the death of the owner triggers the payment of the death benefit. But you can still find, Chris, annuitant-driven annuities. And sometimes annuities have special death benefits called premium or enhanced death benefits that sometimes will trigger at the death of the annuitant, whereas a different death benefit triggers at the death of the owner. So it's still an owner-driven annuity, technically speaking, but it can also pay a death benefit at the death of the annuitant. And it gets really confusing on some of these annuities. The good news is the insurance companies really don't like dealing with a lot of the complexities of these rules. So most new annuities, Chris, are pretty clean. They're owner-driven, but you can occasionally find an annuitant-driven annuity, and it can get a little ugly when that happens. Today, we're going to be talking about owner-driven annuities, folks.
Which is mostly what people will run into. That's
pardon?
Mostly what people would run into today.
Correct. I'm trying to, could turn this into a four-hour podcast.
It was January 18th of 85, just for clarification.
I was close. I said January 14th.
You were darn close.
That was pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I lost my train of thought now. what was I saying?
Owner-driven annuities. We're going to talk about owner-driven. We're going to focus on that because that's what people are going to run into
correct
the most. Yeah.
So I just wanted some people to know that you could still have an annuitant-driven annuity or an annuitant-driven enhanced death benefit that just causes confusion, but they're out there. Today, though, we're going to try to encapsulate the vast majority of annuities, which post January 18th, 1985, are all owner-driven. So, folks, you should know, you should be well-schooled in this now. It's the death of the owner that triggers the death benefit. The death benefit is paid to who, Chris?
The beneficiary or beneficiaries.
Correct. The beneficiary or the beneficiaries. Now, on face value, folks, it's pretty straightforward. At the death of the owner, the beneficiaries inherit the annuity. And again, we're talking a deferred annuity, not in the payout phase. So there is a lump sum of money in there, Chris. Most death benefits at the very, at the very minimum will pay the account balance at death. What was in the account at death? It's pretty straightforward. But some annuities have enhanced death benefits that could pay more than what is the account balance. In other words, more than what the owner would have been able to withdraw had he or she lived. So again, folks, at death, similar to an IRA, at death, your beneficiaries inherit the value of the IRA. Annuities, most of them have that minimum level of a death benefit. However, some have an enhanced death benefit that will actually pay more. Now, the account owner doesn't get the enhanced death benefit unless they die, and they don't get it. The beneficiaries would. So it's quite possible the annuity will pay out more than what the account balance shows. But it pays out to the beneficiary or beneficiaries, plural, and it must do so under the five-year rule. I think everybody listening should know the five-year rule. Chris and I have talked about it in the past. Five-year rule references how IRAs used to be paid out. At the death of the owner, the IRA had to be closed and distributed within 5 years of death, and that there was no minimum amount you had to take out every year. There was no RMD. You could leave it sit for 5 years and then close it by December 31st of the fifth year. That's how IRAs used to be. Then in 2000, it might have been 2001, the laws were changed. Stretch IRAs were created. And then, as everybody knows, last year, 2020, stretch IRAs were abolished and the 10-year rule came in. But the 10-year rule under the Secure Act never applied to annuities. It applies to IRAs. Unless, Chris, your annuity is where?
Oh, in the distribution phase, if it's in the annuitized.
No, if your annuity is inside an IRA,
where
you can get the, okay. Yes.
I was thinking yes. Time period, not physical location.
No. Got it. I don't think you were paying attention.
Well, I was kind of not.
I could tell. Sorry. Well, I'm trying to involve you so we don't get any emails that I just did all the talk.
I warned people up front this was going to mostly be you. So.
Yeah, you did warn people up front. I do appreciate that. But I'm going to hit you with these questions.
Okay, I'll pay a little closer attention.
So pay more attention.
I was multitasking.
Okay. So if your annuity is inside an IRA, folks, the 10-year rule will apply to your beneficiaries. If it's not inside an IRA, the 5-year rule will apply. And the 5-year rule is you've got to close the annuity within 5 years of death as a non-spouse beneficiary. But there are two exceptions to the 5-year rule. Also, before I continue, keep in mind when your beneficiaries inherit your annuity, there is never, because it's income with respect to a decedent, there is never a step up in basis. If you put $50,000 in your annuity and you passed away and it was worth $150,000, when you die, your beneficiaries don't get to step the basis up to $150,000 like they could in a brokerage account. If you had a brokerage account, you put $50,000 in, you passed away, it was worth $150,000, your beneficiaries inherit it. Their basis becomes $150,000. That $100,000 again gets wiped out. And if your beneficiary sold it for $150,000, they would owe no taxes. If they sold it for $180,000, they would only owe taxes on $30,000. The $100,000 again wiped out. But because annuities are IRD, income with respect to a decedent, even if it's a variable annuity where you get to invest the money inside the account in the equity markets and you can make money or lose money, even if it's a variable annuity, no step up in basis at death. So that's because it's called IRD, income with respect to a decedent. So at the death of the owner, the beneficiaries have 5 years to close it. No step up in basis, taxed all as income. Pretty straightforward. But there are two exceptions that apply, if you will, to absolve people from the five-year rule. The first is if the owners, or excuse me, not the owners, I apologize, if the designated beneficiaries of the annuity contract elect to take the annuity payments over a period of time no longer than their life expectancy within 1 year of inheriting the annuity. So you'll often get a letter as a beneficiary. We're talking non-spouse beneficiaries. So a child would often get a letter at the parent owner's death. And the letter pretty much says two things. Let's just say, Chris, the parent died with $100,000 in an annuity. The insurance company will say, you got $100,000, you got to take it all out within 5 years. Or within 1 year, you have to turn on an income stream. You have to turn a noun, annuity, into a verb, annuitization. You have 1 year to tell the insurance company, turn this on into an income stream. The income stream, Chris, cannot be any greater than the remaining life expectancy of that beneficiary. But it does not have to be a lifelong payment. In other words, if a 50-year-old inherits it and the life expectancy is 35, I'm just making that up. I don't know what it is. So let's say a 50-year-old inherits it and the life expectancy is 35 years. They can annuitize it over a period of time not to exceed 35 years or any point less than that, Chris. They can say, give me the payments over the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. But they can't say, give me the payments over the next 50. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Perfect. So that's one exception, listeners, that your beneficiaries will have to the five-year rule. So in other words, Chris, non-qualified annuities can still stretch out.
Mm-hmm. That hasn't gone away. So when you hear about the death of the stretch, it does not apply in this annuity case. Again, unless the annuity is inside the IRA. That's the key to always remember. That will then, that wrapper around the outside trumps all the normal tax treatment of what's inside. Always remember that. That's why there's no step up in an IRA. That's why there's no a stretch anymore, even though an annuity on its own could potentially be stretched via the method that Jim just mentioned, but put it inside that IRA wrapper, all the IRA rules now supersede those other tax rules that would happen outside the IRA.
Correct. And a lot of people think they have to take the payments over their life expectancy. They don't. They just can't go longer than their life expectancy. So that's the rule. They have to enact it within 1 year of dying. Now, that is all provided in IRC, Internal Revenue Code, Section 72S, paragraph 2, if you want to know the actual paragraph. But there is something that screws all this up. I'm not going to get too deep into it. A lot of people like Michael Kitsis have written extensively on this, and typical for Kitsis because he goes into rabbit holes far more than even I do. And the man's brilliant, unlike me. He just knows this stuff inside and out. But there's a section, Chris, I don't know if you heard this before, called 72H. Have you heard of that?
No, doesn't sound familiar.
Okay. What it is, folks, and Chris, prior to 72S coming out, there was 72H. And 72H has a lot of information in it, and a lot of people kind of disagree on the exact meaning. But in short, 72H says that the annuity payments must be elected within 6 months. Now, there's a lot of dispute of 6 months of what? They have to commence within a year. But you must elect them within the first 6 months. 6 months of what? And I don't want to get too deep into that because I think 72H is just overanalyzed and the IRS doesn't care about it anymore since 72S came out. But Congress never removed Section 72H. They just added 72S. And some people say if you were to really want to do this, you must elect to take the annuity payments within 6 months of death of the owner. And again, there's some disputing on if that applies, is actually the case. It's the payments just can be delayed for no more than a year. Does that make sense? Election and when they begin?
Yeah, and I think it's the piece that the IRS is going to be mostly concerned with is the starting of it within the year.
Correct.
So as long as you're adhering to that, I don't think they're going to nitpick over, well, did you say you wanted to do it?
But there are some tax people out there, some real type A personality, deep thinking tax people out there who say, if you don't elect to take the annuity payments within 6 months of death of the owner, it's going to invalidate it. You're not going to be able to do it. I disagree, and most insurance companies disagree, because they give the beneficiaries the full year to make up their mind. This is another classic example, folks, of us not having clear, definitive guidance from IRS. It's as easy as that. There's a lot of confusion in the tax code, and this is one of them. The only reason I share it, and I'm not going to go any deeper than that into it, the only reason I share it is because some people will say, no, that Jim, you know, he's wrong. It's got to be within 6 months. It's not a year. And 72H, I just want our listeners to know that's out there. There's some people who truly believe has to be elected within 6 months. There's other people such as myself and most insurance companies who say, no, you got the whole year to make that election. Does that make sense? Okay. Next thing to keep in mind on this, the tax code is pretty explicit. The payment has to go to a designated beneficiary, which is defined as any quote unquote individual designated as beneficiary of the holder of the contract, any individual designated as beneficiary by the holder of the contract. Individual means human. So you can't name your dog a tree, as we used to joke about in the case of some IRA stories we told, or a trust. And trusts cause problems of that. And we'll cover that on other shows. But often if a trust is for the sole benefit of a human beneficiary, it's not going to work. Same with an IRA. If you have a trust, Chris, as beneficiary of an IRA, and the sole beneficiary of that trust is your spouse doesn't get all the wonderful benefits that we've been talking about on EDU shows in the past of being able to treat the IRA as his or her own, because a trust is not a human, even if it only has human beneficiaries. So a trust will blow this up, folks. Keep that in mind. A trust will blow up an IRA, and a trust will blow up an annuity. And there's other things to keep in mind with trusts being beneficiaries of annuities we'll cover on future shows. Okay, so that's one exception to the five-year rule. It is kind of stretch, if you will. It's not a stretch that, I don't want to say this. I don't want to say you can't set it up. There are some insurance companies, Chris, that will allow an account owner to specify at their death, it must be paid out over the remaining life expectancy of the beneficiaries, and the beneficiaries have no choice. And the insurance company will enact that within 1 year of the owner's death. A lot of insurance companies push that. if they say, do you want to force the stretch out to your beneficiaries? So that is one thing you could do. Some insurance companies allow owners to specify the beneficiaries can only receive the money that way. Okay. Any thoughts, questions, comments on anything I just covered?
No, I think it's pretty clear so far.
Okay. The next one causes a little bit of confusion, and it's called spousal continuation. In other words, 72S allows an annuity to be continued as if the account owner never died by the beneficiary with all the same benefits and rules of the existing annuity before the owner died if the beneficiary was the spouse of the owner. So it's called spousal continuation. The spouse steps in. There's no death benefit. There's no forced payout. There's no one-year rule of stretching. There's no five-year rule on paying out. The spouse just steps in and treats the annuity as their own. Remember, as I said previously, it will not apply if you name a trust and the only beneficiary of that trust is your spouse. It will not work. Spousal continuation will not work there. But spousal continuation, fairly straightforward, as you can sense. It allows the spouse to step in and treat the annuity as their own. But only, Chris, only if the deceased spouse was the owner of the annuity. If it was an annuitant-driven contract and the deceased spouse was just the annuitant of the contract, not the owner, just the annuitant, then the spouse would not be able to do spousal continuation. Or if you had an owner-driven contract and the annuitant was the person who passed away and it paid an enhanced death benefit at the death of the annuitant, but it was a different owner. Sometimes you'll see, Chris, let's say the wife owns the annuity and she's beneficiary of her annuity and she used her husband's life as the annuitant. You sometimes see that. If the contract had an enhanced death benefit that paid at the death of the annuitant and the husband died, the spouse doesn't get spousal continuation on that enhanced death benefit, because the husband didn't also own the annuity. Again, a very rare case that I just described since 1985. Most likely the deceased spouse owned the contract and was the annuitant of the contract. But sometimes you still see some of these older ones still out there. But do recognize, folks, that the spouse must be the owner, the spouse who dies, must be the owner of the contract. Other than that, it's fairly straightforward, spousal continuation. Where confusion sets in, Chris, is at the insurance company level. When you get into annuities with special types of income benefits, keep in mind, folks, if you're working with someone and you're buying an annuity, and you want a joint and survivor payout on the income benefit, if the person selling you the annuity says there is no joint and survivor payout option, but there's spousal continuation, or they gloss over it and say, oh, joint and survivor, sure, we have spousal continuation for your spouse. spousal continuation is not the same as joint and survivor payout. I'll do a whole EDU show, Chris, on explaining all that because it can get really confusing. Spousal continuation is not the same as joint and survivor payouts of an income benefit. Today we're talking about annuities not in the payout phase. But when you get into the payout phase, spousal continuation is not the same as joint and survivor. And it's quite possible under spousal continuation, the spouse who survives gets little or no income benefit. And I cringe, Chris, when I hear about or witness directly annuity salespeople, and we're not throwing them under the bus. We offer annuities. Again, we're not anti-annuity. We're anti-annuity for every single thing that you do. But I cringe, Chris, when I hear people saying, oh, it's got spousal continuation, so your spouse is okay with the income benefit. That is not true. And I'll talk about that on another show. Okay?
Okay.
Perfect. Final thing I want to talk about is kind of what you and I chatted about in email this week, Chris. All the examples I've given have been fairly straightforward. The owner dies, the beneficiary inherits it. The owner dies, the beneficiary inherits it. Can there be more than one owner, though, Chris?
There can be joint owners, yes.
Yes. Of annuities held outside of an IRA, non-qualified annuities, mm-hmm. ones we're talking about. If an annuity is inside an IRA, it cannot be jointly held because the I in IRA stands for individual.
Right.
However, in a non-qualified annuity, you can have a joint owner. And you see this quite often. You see joint owners. I cringe on joint owners. I cringe because I don't think the people buying them understand the rules we're about to go over, Chris. And in all honesty, sadly, I don't think a lot of people selling annuities understand the rules we're going to be going over. But safe to say, Chris, am I a fan of joint annuity ownership?
No.
No. Because here's what happens, folks. In 1986, the law changed. And the law used to say at the death of the owner, which could be construed. Well, let me change it. The law used to say at the death of the holder, wasn't really the owner, the holder of the annuity, which some could be construed that payouts were not forced until the last holder, which is another word for owner, dies. So follow this logic if they didn't change the law, Chris. The way it used to be written, the holder. So you get a husband and wife, Chris. Follow mm-hmm. my logic here. Mm-hmm. There are no forced required minimum distributions from annuities mm-hmm. unless the owner of the annuity gets to a certain age, correct?
Right.
So you have a husband and wife own an annuity. They put $100,000 in. It's grown to $300,000. Under the old rules, it's a jointly held annuity. One of them dies. Now you have one owner left, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That owner names her 20-year-old son as a joint owner. And then she dies. Now a 20-year-old son, we still have a holder, do we not?
Mm-hmm. Talk about kicking the can down the road.
No kidding. And then the holder names himself as beneficiary. Is he anywhere near the, say, age 85 annuitization age?
Not quite.
Not quite. And then he names his wife as joint owner. And then they have kids. You follow what could happen?
Yeah. Just rolling this thing over,
just
over and over
keep
and over
kicking
again.
This can down the road. So in 86, they changed the law. They were smart. And they changed the law to say at the death of any owner, folks, any owner, the death benefit is paid to the beneficiary. And all too often, you see a husband and wife, they say have a joint brokerage account, Chris. And for one reason or another, they're told they should move that money into an annuity. A tax reason, or the annuity has some sort of guaranteed growth, or whatever. For whatever reason, we're not going to pass judgment. Let's say it was reasonable to buy the annuity. And they're told you should take the money in your joint account and buy an annuity. We're not against that, folks. There could be very reasonable and very financially viable reasons a couple would want to take non-qualified brokerage or bank money and put it in an annuity. So that's not the issue. But the couple thinks, Chris, well, it's coming from a joint account.
Right.
And the reason they have it as a joint account, folks, at the brokerage house or bank, is they know at the death of either of us, the surviving spouse can step in. There's no problem. Mm-hmm. They own the account. It doesn't go through probate, whereas if it was in one spouse's name, it might go through probate. Now, granted, banks have TOD and POD capabilities, which we won't get into. That kind of removes that issues now. But for the most part, couples still think it's easier to be a joint owner because the other spouse can step in. Or in the case of incapacitation, Chris, there's another spouse who's owner and they feel it's going to be easier to manage. So they become joint owners. Mm-hmm. And what do they then do for the beneficiary? If they're the joint owners, who do they going to name what?
Their kids.
Usually, their kids or a charity or their church or alma mater.
You made it 47 minutes in.
Say what?
Well, you made it 47 minutes in.
You're keeping track now of how long
well,
I go
just glanced
before
over
I muff
this,
up a word?
This is the first. You're doing well. I'm giving you praise.
Oh, that's praise.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I didn't realize
47
you were
minutes
me.
In. Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So back to what I was trying to say, folks. So you have a husband and wife become joint owners, and then they name their kids or their church or a school that they went to and like a lot. And they feel, okay, at the death of the second owner, because that's how our bank or brokerage account would have worked, Chris. At the death of the second owner, then the kid or the school or the church gets the money.
Mm-hmm.
But since 1986, what happens at the death of either the husband or the wife?
Goes to the beneficiary and the surviving spouse gets cut
gets
out.
Gets tiddly squat.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's the plan, but you better know that that's what's going to happen. And you want that to happen if you name or you title the annuity or hold the annuity jointly.
Exactly. Now, the beneficiary has the, if you're ever surprised by this, folks, you can approach the beneficiary and say, son or daughter or school that I wanted to leave the money to, we didn't want you to get it until the second one of us died. The only thing the beneficiary can do within 9 months of death is disclaim. Say, forget it, we don't want it. If they disclaim, there's now no beneficiary. And most annuity contracts will leave it to the estate of the decedent. And then the spouse can get it that way. But will the child disclaim? Will a charity disclaim, Chris?
Will a charity? Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not, because their legal team would say, well, maybe this is what they wanted to happen, who are we to second guess this? This was set up this way, and this is how it works.
Right. This is what the decedent wanted. Right. How do we know he or she didn't know this would happen?
And we can't ask them now because they are now dead.
Right.
So
avoid this, folks. Recognize in a jointly owned annuity, the payout is at the death of any holder. And that's since 1986. So got to keep that in mind or you can run into some serious trouble. Now, the industry, in its defense, I know the insurance industry always gets thrown under the bus, unjustifiably at times and very justifiably at others. Many insurance companies, Chris, not all of them, sadly, not all of them, but many have restricted now joint ownership only to spouses, and they include default language in the annuity contract that says something to this effect, Chris. The primary beneficiary is any surviving joint owner. So if they limit, follow the logic here of the insurance company, if they limit joint ownership to only spouses and their default beneficiary is any surviving joint owner, spousal continuation can step in and that annuity just sits there because the beneficiary is the surviving spouse. Right. Follow their logic?
Yep.
So a lot of insurance companies, not all folks, will limit joint ownership to just that scenario. Only spouses can be joint owners, and the beneficiary must be the surviving joint owner. And then you can name other. They usually give you the option. Something to the effect of it'll say, unless this box is checked and beneficiary is listed below. In other words, going back to what we originally described, maybe the parents wanted the children to inherit it at the death of the first spouse, irrespective of which one it is. So they still give you that option, but you have to specify it. But you'll sometimes see that restriction on joint ownership of annuities. But I have also seen annuities where that is not there. And you see a husband and wife own it. You see beneficiaries. And I cringe. We handled an annuity contract recently for a couple. And when I saw it, I got a hold of them right away. They had themselves named as joint owners on the contract. And they had three charities as beneficiaries. They thought, they told me, what would happen is at the death of the second spouse to die, the charities got the money. When I told them what will happen, they changed it. One owned it. The other was the beneficiary. The charities, primary beneficiary, the charities were contingent. So you can satisfy, again, a lot of people want the joint ownership, Chris, because they think it's easier avoiding probate, and it's going to be easier if one of them becomes incapacitated to service the contract. Well, you can solve that with two steps. One of you own it. One of you are primary beneficiaries. Whoever you want to get it at the death of the second spouse is contingent beneficiaries. That will still bypass probate, folks. Annuities are insurance contracts. Contracts passed by right of law, not probate. So at the death of the first owner, or the only owner in my example, the primary beneficiary, the spouse, inherits it right away, Chris. No probate. Mm-hmm. Follow me?
Yes.
Then a good power of attorney form, folks, and you could probably get one from the insurance company that will apply specifically to that annuity, or you can have a general one that an attorney creates for you. you could put a good power of attorney form together, granting your spouse, if you're the owner, granting your spouse the ability to service that annuity contract. So there'll be a legal document helping in the case of incapacitation and a legal document, the beneficiary form, that will bypass probate. That is a much better way of doing it than having two joint owners and at the death of either of them, the charity or children are inheriting it. But you might also be able to find an insurance company that solves it by default, folks. At the death of either joint owner, the primary beneficiary is the surviving joint owner, and the joint owners must be spouses. That will also accomplish the same thing. But if you don't have that language in there, you're going to be in for a rude awakening at the death of either spouse. Mm-hmm. All right. That's kind of all I wanted to talk about today. I think that was enough annuity mm-hmm. operational overload. But hopefully people can realize that, wow, these things are neat. They're interesting. Hopefully you're learning more about them, more than you ever imagined. From a retirement standpoint, I think they are a practical tool, not for everyone, but where they fit, Chris and I feel they're practical. But I want you to also recognize they can be confusing and it's not hard to make mistakes.
Yeah, it's good to know the rules on these things. And a lot of it you have to kind of know yourself and be watching for. Not that you have to be an expert in the area, but at least know enough to ask the right questions. Whenever you're dealing with things that are going to happen after you pass away, you should be asking who's putting it together for you or who's selling you whatever it might be. Just ask them bluntly, what's going to happen if this, that, and the other thing? Is it really going to behave this way? Don't assume. There's a lot of this stuff that from common sense, it would seem like it would work a certain way, like this joint ownership of an annuity situation. And in fact, it may not work at all like you were hoping. So good thing to pay attention to. Anybody who has any suggestions for an EDU show, or if you've got questions that have popped up from some of these shows we've done on annuities, you can reach out to us on our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And then there's a contact form. You can also read a little bit more about us and what we do. And you can submit any of your questions related to annuities or not. I know we've gotten quite a few lately because we've been kind of on this explaining annuities focus for the past several EDU shows in particular. But I know we've got some tidying up to do on a long-term care topic that's coming up on an EDU show. I think we've been teasing that for the past few weeks, but
we were going to try that today.
Yeah, the schedules are going to align here shortly, I think. So I would expect if it's not the next show, then the show after that. But probably next week we'll be doing a little more work in the long-term care insurance world area.
And we were going to bring Bob on for taxes, mm-hmm. but he's just been swamped. He was going to come on last week. He was going to try to come on this week. And we were supposed to have Greg to do the LTC this week, folks. And that fell through for a variety of reasons. So pretty much 20 minutes before Chris and I started recording, I thought, well, we're going to do this. And I think it's good. I think people need us. We didn't talk specifics about the product and how they work. It's more of what happens at death.
Right.
And especially the last part on the joint ownership. I guarantee you someone listening to this podcast, at least one person listening to this podcast, has a jointly held annuity and didn't know what we just told them.
Yep.
And they're going to go pull that contract out and see, will their spouse get it or will, because it has the default language, or is the beneficiary, which might be their children, church, charity, whatever, going to get it? So I can guarantee you at least one, maybe more people got something out of this. I hope. I hope everyone did. That's interesting stuff that you need to know if you're going to consider these types of products as part of your retirement plan.
Perfect. Well, thanks everybody for listening to another show, and we'll be back with you next week with another set of shows. Take care.
You have listened to Jim on the radio. read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.